Madam Chief Justice, judges, good morning. Before we discuss what the issues are in this case, I'd like to begin with the discussion of what's not at issue, because given the charged rhetoric of the various amicus briefs that have been filed in this case, as well as the language of the brief of the respondent in this case, I think it's important to focus on the narrow, limited issue before this court today. What's not at issue in this case is whether this property is blighted. What is not at issue in this case is whether this is a private taking for a private use. What is not at issue in this case before this court today is whether this taking is for a public purpose. What is not at issue, certainly, in this case is whether or not eminent domain is a good thing or is a bad thing for the state of Missouri. The procedural posture of this case is critical. That is, Judge Williams dismissed this petition. Therefore, all of the allegations in the petition are assumed as true, clearly. Therefore, all of those questions that we just talked about are not relevant. The limited issue in this case relates to the constitutionality issue. In Judge Williams' declaration in his order, that takings which result in a shopping center being built, though not in evidence before him, are simply not acceptable. It is simply something the government cannot do, notwithstanding decades and decades of opinions by this court. Judge Williams simply said, this is something you can't do.
I thought the precise issue was whether or not the this classification of city has the authority to use the eminent domain power.
It is the precise issue, Judge. And he sustained the motion to dismiss and simply said, under no circumstances can this classification of city use that power. And if
this court disagrees with that determination, then the other issues that you mentioned, specifically blight and all of that, then become relevant on remand to the trial court.
Precisely. Okay. In other words, there's no evidentiary record before this court, nor was there one produced at all with respect to those other challenges to the right to take. Different day, different time. What is being sought here and what Judge Williams entered was a broad order suggesting that charter cities and counties are the only entities that are permitted to eliminate blight within their confines. So that if we have a charter city on one side, bordered by a third-class city on the other side, the charter city, according to their argument and according to Judge Williams' ruling, can do something about blight. Not just condemn, that's a secondary part of all of this. Clear, replan, redevelop, do whatever, in some circumstances, many as a matter of fact, eminent domain never used. Use the financial tools that are necessary. That's okay for one city, but if your border city, another small city, is a third class city or a fourth class city, it can't do anything about it by their standard. They simply say the Constitution says, if you're lucky enough, you can do something. If you are a third-class or fourth-class city, you simply have to watch your city erode. And none of those tools are available.
So what does the Constitution... I'm sorry, tell us.
No. Okay.
So what does the Constitution tell us? What the Constitution tells us, Judge, very simply is, and what this court has said after that, the Constitution tells us that the reclamation, the planning, the clearing of blight is a public purpose. Let there be no mistake. The Constitution also tells us in plain language that the General Assembly may enact laws and constitutional charter cities and counties may enact ordinances to clear, plan, redevelop, and go on, so on and so forth, and then later getting to exercise the power of eminent domain. Indeed, if the Constitution was written as they suggest, the entry language, the laws may be enacted, becomes an irrelevancy. Because all you simply say is constitutional charter cities and counties may enact ordinances and go on. So the Constitution tells us in that language that the legislature, that entity from which the power of eminent domain undisputedly comes, It doesn't come from the Constitution. It comes from the state, and the state delegates, and this court has ruled just shortly after the adoption of the Constitution itself. So that, I think, is what the Constitution is telling us. The grant of power doesn't come from the Constitution. The grant of the power of eminent domain comes from the legislature. And in this provision, when the clearance of slums was predominant in this country, a concern of all, there was simply a declaration, look, this is a public purpose, recognizing the limitation on private takings for private purposes that are set forth in Article 1, Section 28 of the very same Constitution.
Is the issue of public purpose before us, or is it the issue of whether or not the Constitution allows non-charter cities to adopt laws permitting eminent domain?
Only the latter issue. The issue of public purpose is not here. Again, Judge, my point at the beginning was there's an allegation that this is for a public purpose. So that's not an issue was not ruled on. So the only what they're suggesting is assuming of an absolute undisputed public purpose, absolute clearance of light, we need to get rid of this problem at the core of our city because we're being destroyed. What they're suggesting, if you are unfortunately a third class or a fourth class city, you can't do anything about it. The Constitution says no.
Thank you for the clarity of your disposition. You really have cleared things up and focused on the issue. And it may get back to what the comma means. In essence, a charter city can, I mean, an interpretation can be a charter city can enact laws, but a third or fourth class city cannot, but the legislature can. The state legislature can. And so if the legislature says they can blight or not blight, on the first part of that, the Article 4, Section 21, why isn't that interpretation, why isn't the comma given some meaning in that regard?
I hope I answered the question, Judge. I hope I understood it. The provision is that the General Assembly, and there is legislative history here, supposedly, that shows that the original language was the General Assembly may enact laws, okay, and then it was just reduced to laws may be enacted. That if the General Assembly doesn't enact a law allowing for third and fourth and other class cities, or like in this situation, in the TIF Act, it said all municipalities. What is a municipality defined as? Every city, village, and town of this state, no limitation, can do all this. So what happened, Judge Teitelman, is that without that enabling legislation, there's also LCRA legislation, there's all kinds of other legislation that the state legislature said, here are cities is what you're entitled to do. Here are redevelopment corporations is what you're entitled to. It allowed for all of that. And in the Anbar case, which I would submit to the court, you would have to sit overrule in order to accept their position. In the Anbar case, years ago, this court said a redevelopment corporation can be delegated the power of eminent domain. The legislature has that prerogative.
Why didn't the drafters of the Constitution just say all cities?
Judge, the essentially, I would suggest that there was the idea that we want this to come from the state legislature. I think there was a recognition that the Constitution doesn't grant. So what happened was the Constitution says, legislature, it's your choice. You give this power. We're not. Legislature, you may enact laws. You may enact its Chapter 99 and set out the guidelines. Charter cities, on the other hand, have the ability to go their own way. So that if the legislature never acted on this, never said, here's the mechanism, here's the device, third-class cities like Arnold could not do anything.
So it's your position the legislature did not act, so that first part of the Constitution doesn't take effect?
Exactly right. Laws may be enacted. If none, Judge, was enacted, nothing happened, they couldn't do anything. On the other hand, at that moment, with this declaration of public purpose, the city of St. Louis, for instance, a charter city, a home rule city, could go on its own, enact enabling legislation just like Chapter 99, and say, here's what we want to do in the city of St. Louis. We can do that because we are a charter city.
But on the first part, laws may be enacted. The second part of opposing counsel's argument is that even if laws may be enacted and we were to agree with your constitutional argument, the TIF Act is not such a law and doesn't permit what was done here. Can you address that briefly?
I'm going to try to understand that, Judge. I have had difficulty almost from the get-go when there is a definition of municipality within the text of Chapter 99 itself, which says a municipality is. And clearly, undisputedly, the city of Arnold falls within that definition. It gives that power to the city of to all cities, villages, and counties.
As I understood, its argument was it provides a financing mechanism for condemnation and for other development matters, but does not provide a methodology, and therefore is not sufficient to authorize condemnation itself.
Well, to the extent that the methodology becomes an issue, there is obviously and clearly a methodology. There has not been a single case in the state of Missouri which has said the failure to provide this procedure means that the substance or the essence of this law is going to be disregarded. Of course, Judge, there's a Chapter 523 which sets forth the procedure. There is a rule of this court that tells condemning authorities what they are to do and how they are to do it. So I don't know how this very court could say our own rules, which set forth the procedure, are inapplicable to this. They cite, in reliance on that procedural argument, a state of Washington case where the general procedure, our 523 or our Rule 86, had been repealed the year before. And don't tell the court that. So at the time this is enacted, there is no procedure to condemn property. So they're saying, how in the world can you do this if there is no procedure to do this? You've got to tell us something. We have an overall procedure that is used, Chapter 523 and Rule 86, in every condemnation case that I know of. So there is an established procedure there. What I think they do, though, Judge, in the TIF component is to say, and they kind of changed. I mean, in the trial court, it was unconstitutional, unconstitutional, unconstitutional. I think they recognize the implications statewide with all that is going on and has gone on. If this court would accept the argument, this is unconstitutional. So the easier route is let's simply address the limited issue. But that issue is under constitutional limitations, so don't we simply circle back to the main argument and then ask, is there a constitutional limitation at all?
And you can address that further in the reply. Thank you.
Please, the court. The city is incorrect in arguing that this is a constitutional case. This is a statutory construction case. The constitutional question is subordinate to that, and we know that from the trial court's decision.
Didn't the trial court judge clearly say the statute was unconstitutional?
No, Your Honor. What the trial court said was Section 99 provides that the acquisition of property is subject to constitutional limitations. It cannot be assumed that the legislature intended this language to be meaningless. The court would question whether the legislature could have conferred this power, but that question need not be answered, as the reference to constitutional limitations in the TIF Act is a clear indication that there was no such.
Well, how about the next paragraph then that says, it is the judgment of the court that the city of Arnold lacks constitutional authority to take the property of defendants under Chapter 99, and that to the extent Chapter 99 is inconsistent with Article 6, Section 21 of the Constitution, it is declared unconstitutional. That seems pretty direct.
The trial court was finding that the city of Arnold also lacked independent constitutional authority. It lacks authority under Section 99, the TIF Act, and it also lacks any independent constitutional authority. So the court was finding that although it was skeptical that the TIF Act was constitutional in authorizing the city of Arnold to exercise such a power, it found that the TIF Act did not do so.
It specifically said it was unconstitutional. If it did, it wasn't skeptical.
What it said was the city of Arnold lacks constitutional authority to take the property, but it was not necessary to reach the question of the constitutionality because it found that the TIF Act also didn't confer that authority. So the question before this court is whether the TIF Act authorizes non-charter cities to exercise eminent domain for redevelopment. And then, secondarily, if so, whether the TIF Act is constitutional under Article 6, Section 21. Now, the TIF Act is the only law in all of the
states. Well, yeah, but that turns on whether, I thought your argument turns on whether there are constitutional limitations.
Well, what.
And so we have to go back to Article whatever, Section 20.
Yes, the article, the Constitution is relevant.
So the constitutional limitations that you identify are in that section, aren't they?
In Article 6, Section 21?
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so really we got to go back there to...
We do ultimately have to address the Constitution in order to understand what limitations apply to the TIF Act.
Right.
But,
if any,
it is an indication that the legislature did not intend to exercise any of its marginal work or push the boundaries of any constitutional authority it might have. That section indicates that courts should employ the doctrine of constitutional avoidance and construe the statute strictly, which they're already required to do. There are two layers of strict construction in this case. Eminent domain provisions and the powers of non-charter cities must be strictly construed. So in order to avoid the constitutional question, because we know the legislature wanted its power to be subordinate to any constitutional limitations, to avoid that, we construe the TIF Act narrowly. Now, there are other...
Well, you've got to find out what the constitutional limitations are, if any.
Well, we don't
That's how you have to start.
What we have to start with is what power is conferred by the Constitution.
Right.
The Constitution confers that power clearly
right.
to constitutional charter cities. And then the TIF Act says, subject to the constitutional limitations...
Well, wouldn't that be a reference, among other things, to the Section 28 that says that what a public purpose is... is a judicially determined...
That's correct. That's correct, that it is. And the court would have to face that question if it construed the TIF Act broadly, as the city asks it to do. But as we know, strict construction applies, and any ambiguity in the statute must be construed in favor of the property owner.
Is now, Article 6, Section 21 a limitation or grant of authority?
Article 6, Section 21 grants authority to charter cities. It says laws may be enacted and charter cities may provide by ordinance.
But if you're not now, a charter city, you get your authority from the legislature.
From the laws,
laws are enacted.
No, Your Honor. Article 6, Section 21 comes in the portion of the Constitution devoted to the power of charter cities. And it says that laws may be enacted or charter cities may provide by ordinance. Now, if we were to interpret that as...
No, it says and, actually.
Well, yes, and if we were to interpret
well,
that
so
as...
Well, so the first part is superfluous because charter cities, by their very nature, are autonomous and they have the powers that are delegated to them by the Constitution. They don't need enabling legislation.
They don't
to,
need it.
To that do anything true. Else that if it's true. In the Constitution.
What Article 6, Section 21 does is it says, look, the legislature can enact... general laws, either general laws providing for the taking of blighted areas, or procedural mechanisms to facilitate the taking of property by charter cities. Or charter cities may enact ordinances to do so independently on their own.
You know, it doesn't... But
they got charter cities... Oh, sorry.
It doesn't actually have all that language in it. It says laws may be enacted, comma... and any city or county operating under a constitutional charter may enact ordinances,
that's right.
comma. And it's unclear to me how you're giving meaning to both those phrases because constitutional charter cities do not need a further law, state law, in order to enact ordinances, but other cities do. And opposing counsel says that gives meaning to both those phrases, and I'm not clear how what you're saying gives meaning to laws may be enacted.
It's actually our interpretation that gives meaning to both of those provisions, because what that says is that the legislature may enact general laws allowing for the taking of this property, or...
But why didn't it do that in the TIF Act?
I'm sorry?
Why didn't the TIF Act do just that?
Well, because the TIF Act says that the grant of power is subordinate to whatever constitutional limitations apply. It does not mean to confer the authority to parties...
So it's subordinate to the charter cities. Leave out the charter cities. We got the Constitution says charter cities can do it once.
That's right.
We're looking at a non-charter city.
Right.
So when the TIF Act says it's subordinate to other constitutional limitations, that's the charter cities. Are you saying there is no authority from the legislature now to deal with the first part of the Article 6, Section 21?
What we're saying is the laws may be enacted provision allows for the legislature to provide some mechanism facilitating charter cities exercising this authority or taking blighted areas on their own if charter cities want to act under state authority instead of their own charter.
What do they have? Do they have anything that applies to non-charter cities? Does the TIF Act apply to non-charter cities?
No, it does not apply to non-charter cities. And the reason we know that, there are several reasons. The first one is that it's subordinate to constitutional limitations, which is an indication that the legislature, even if the legislature...
Well, that's only if Section 21 constitutes a constitutional limitation.
Yes. Well, but even if Section 21 allows the legislature to confer this authority, the legislature is conferring only the authority that is already present in the Constitution because it is subject to the constitutional limitation. It doesn't say In this act, we are conferring authority on parties that never had this authority.
Counsel, I don't think you're acknowledging. I think Judge Limbaugh and Judge Russell's questions suggested that this our case is distinguished between sections that grant authority under the Constitution and those that limit authority. And this section is a grant of authority. Other sections may limit it, for instance, to you have to find public purpose and various other kinds of things. This is a grant, so I don't see how your constitutional limitation argument brings you to this point.
The Constitution confers authority to charter cities. The TIF Act then comes along and says, subordinate to the conferring of authority that already exists, mm-hmm. the cities may do the following. It doesn't say, we are going to exercise our purported constitutional authority to grant this power to non-charter cities. Nowhere in the Act does it say that. Again, the Act is the only Act in all of Missouri law that says, subject to the constitutional limitations. They put that language in there for a reason. It's very significant. At the very least, it makes the purported grant of authority ambiguous.
Your interpretation of under constitutional limitation takes away what the language of the statute grants, does it not? It is granting to the municipalities the right of eminent domain for blighted areas, and then you're saying they threw in this one clause which takes that power away. Is that a reasonable interpretation?
That's not what the TIF Act is. The TIF Act says, quote, pursuant to a redevelopment plan, subject to any constitutional limitations, a government may acquire by purchase, donation, lease, or as part of a redevelopment plan, eminent domain. And then it goes on to various financing provisions. So the TIF Act perfectly constitutionally allows non-charter cities to exercise the financial schemes that are laid out in great detail in the TIF Act. I mean, it goes on and on about the financial mechanisms to be used. It also conveys perfectly constitutional authority to non-charter cities to purchase land, to receive donations of land. But there is a specific constitutional provision that applies to the use of eminent domain and confers that authority to charter cities.
So
and
it all comes to... Go ahead.
And then the TIF Act incorporates that provision because of the clause that says subject to constitutional limitations. Otherwise, that phrase would be rendered meaningless. The city argues that it means due process and just compensation. We already know that that's required for takings, right? That would mean that the subject to constitutional limitations language in the TIF Act is surplusage and has no constitutional effect. Our interpretation gives effect not only to that language, but also to the language laws may be enacted in the TIF Act that allows the legislature to, for example, the example I've been using is the state of Mississippi has a special court that is devoted to just eminent domain cases. The state of Missouri could create such a thing under the laws may be enacted provision that facilitates the taking of blighted areas by charter cities, for example. So the laws may be enacted provision does have operative effect, as does the charter cities may, if they choose, provide by ordinance instead of using the laws that are enacted by the legislature.
Why would the constitutional drafters limit it, according to your interpretation, just to chartered cities and counties? Isn't there blight in smaller entities?
Well, there are several reasons. We know from the debates of the Constitutional Convention that it was intended specifically to apply to a handful of enumerated large cities, charter cities. But we also know that constitutional charter cities have certain checks and balances that non-charter cities don't have. For example, the power of initiative, referendum, recall, something that non-charter cities are not able to do. So the residents of charter cities have greater protection against potential abuse by their city governments than non-charter city residents do. And that's an important point, because what's happening here is non-charter cities are trying to assume on their own the authority to use eminent domain for redevelopment without having a debate in the legislature about it.
So if there was a statute that said, following the first part of the Constitution, said this statute applies to non-charter cities, and under these provisions, under this procedure, under this methodology, they can do eminent domain. That'd be okay.
That would be a much stronger argument then. I mean, we'd probably be back here arguing whether that's constitutional or not. But that's not necessary to get to, because the TIF Act doesn't provide that. And one point that you mentioned was the TIF Act provides no procedural mechanism for the condemnation. Now, the city argues that 523 is the catch-all that applies to all condemnation cases when not otherwise specified. But that's not true. The language of 523 applies to public utilities. It says any road, railroad, street railway, telephone, telegraph, electrical corporation, etc., or any other corporation created under the laws for public use may exercise this power. City of Arnold is not a corporation in charter.
Is there any way that the City of Arnold can become a charter or a first class citizen?
They could certainly apply for or create a charter and become a charter city if they chose to do so, but it hasn't done so, and therefore it doesn't qualify.
If the court adopts your interpretation, what happens to all the many TIF projects that are going on currently in third and fourth class cities, including like the Branson Landing?
If there are cases in which property has already been taken, I don't think there's really anything that courts could do about that. In cases where the land is being considered to be taken, then the cities would not be able to proceed under those provisions. Now, we know that there don't appear to be any Missouri cases holding that non-charter cities can exercise the eminent domain power under the TIF Act, and we don't really have any reports on how often this goes on. Perhaps these things have been addressed before and then settled out of court or something like that. But the argument that redevelopment would collapse in Missouri is a rather specious argument, because again, non-charter cities can exercise the power to purchase land, receive donations, they can use all the financial procedures under the TIF Act, but they don't have any explicit constitutional authority, they don't have any procedural mechanism provided, because 523 and Rule 86 are not catch-all provisions. They don't apply to the charter. And if they did, if they were catch-all provisions for the procedures of condemnation, why did they not cite them in their complaint?
What about Rule 86?
What
about Rule 86? Doesn't that provide the procedures there?
No, because Rule 86.02 says that it only applies if a party has the authority to condemn under eminent domain. So that simply begs the question.
But to the extent your argument is that they can't have the authority because there's no procedures, it does answer that.
Not really, either. The second point is, it also doesn't provide a thorough procedure for eminent domain. It doesn't say, for example, how the monetary award shall be apportioned and things like that. It's not thorough the way 523 or the procedure provided in Section 88 or any of these things are.
Your opponent argues in his brief that there are other statutory sections that grant the power of eminent domain that don't include the mechanism.
No. Every eminent domain provision either includes its own mechanism for condemnation, points to Section 523 explicitly, or states that it should be used in the manner prescribed by law. The TIF Act contains none of that language. None of it at all. Section 1 of the TIF Act, the one that's cited here, is the only provision that refers to eminent domain at all in that section. So there is no procedural mechanism. This court should follow the lead of the Eilers decision, in which the Highway Department claimed that it had the authority to engage in soil surveys when they had statutory authority to engage in surveys of land. And the court found that that would raise serious constitutional questions under the power of eminent domain, and therefore it was appropriate to avoid the constitutional questions by construing the act narrowly. That's what the Missouri courts did in Smithville, in Hodge, in Meehan, in the cases that we cite. In all those cases, the non-charter cities were granted much more explicit authority to condemn than in this case, which provides no mechanism and includes constitutional limitations.
So your argument would also apply to charter cities to the extent you're saying that the TIF Act does not provide the procedures and they're not supplied by Rule 86.
Not at all, Your Honor. The TIF Act is one of, as far as charter cities are concerned, it allows a charter city to follow its procedures. There's no reason, no constitutional reason or otherwise, why a charter city cannot follow the TIF Act procedure for financing condemnations or provide by ordinance in its own manner for the procedures for condemnation and so forth.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please support. The difficulty with their argument is that it simply makes no sense. In accordance with the questions that this Court has asked, why would the Constitution, adopted by the people of this state, say that we are going to distinguish charter cities and counties from other cities and counties throughout the state and say, we're just going to let you do it rather than you? The suggestion that only charters and cities and counties have the competence and have the people and have the wherewithal to take care of their own communities is preposterous.
But the Constitution does distinguish between charter cities and City of St. Louis is a separate category. It does distinguish between different categories of cities for different purposes in the
without question, Judge. But they distinguish between those entities without regard to a substantive issue like this. Okay, you get to do this charter city, you don't third-class city. Tell the city of Chesterfield, a non-charter city of 47,000 people, that when it was sitting 20 feet underwater after the 1993 flood, it had all of that corridor totally destroyed, that too bad, City of Chesterfield, you are a non-charter city, so you have to sit there and watch the guts of your city continue to decay and rot because of the fact that's what the Constitution says. No intent to do so. It would be an absolutely ridiculous reading of the Constitution to suggest that. This case, if you accept their argument, laws may be enacted is meaningless. And Judge Tidal, going back to your point, what does that language say? If it's only constitutional charter cities and counties, why say laws may be enacted? The essence is, first of all, wouldn't need to be there at all. And secondly, their interpretation renders that meaningless because the state is powerless to enact any law that would authorize a non-charter city or county to do what Chapter 99 allows. And Judge Russell, the implications would be dire. And I will suggest, not just because of eminent domain, but if you look at this article and you look at Chapter 99, eminent domain is a small component of what that all portends and what that allows cities to do. To say that it's unconstitutional to do any redevelopment and replanting simply is not the rule. And again, the final point, the continued suggestion that the Constitution grants, if the court would look at those two cases that we cite in the brief that were decided in 1947, and that is the James case, and that is the Board of Regents versus Palmer. They both talk about language like this, and all of those cases, together with the Anbar case, continue to suggest the grant doesn't come from the Constitution. This was an already existing state already using the power of eminent domain. The power of eminent domain comes from the legislature. There is no prohibition in the Constitution for the exercise of that power by the City of Arnold, and the judgment should be reversed.
Thank you, counsel.